going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets powered by FTN. I'm your host, Chris Meany. Thanks, as always, for taking the time to hang out, continuing the MLB team previews. If you're looking to get involved in a fantasy baseball package, well, you head to FTNFantasy.com/pricing. You will see our MLB package, just $19.99. All kinds of great content there already, and going to take care of you throughout the fantasy baseball season as well with articles, weekly waiver wire stuff. And I have a great guest. I'm super thrilled for you guys just to be able to sit back and listen to this guy talk baseball. He is the co-host of Cork Stats. He is a big part of our fantasy baseball draft guide. Ruth, Garrett, DiMaggio, Mantle, Costanza, Big John, here to talk about the New York Yankees. Well, at MLB moving average, that's AVG. Big John, man, what's going on?
Man, that was an awesome intro. Thank you. Really our first time kind of working together on Mean Streets. I'm so honored. The guest list has been incredible, man. I never really thought I kind of fit in that tier, but man, let's go. Let's rip the cord in this, and I'm going to see if I can keep up, man.
Oh, buddy, you're going to keep up just fine. So, right. Yeah, let's talk about the Yankees. As we progress here, I'll, you know, throw some odds at you, some props. But, yeah, they have a 95.5 win total. They're plus 550 to win the World Series, plus 240 to win the AL pennant. Favorites to win the AL East, minus 189. Let's just start with the rotation. There's not much really to say, John, about Gerrit Cole. We know that he's a stud. Depending on whatever ranks you see, he's mostly top three, whether he's behind DeGrom, ahead of DeGrom, in front of Bieber, behind Bieber, whatever. He's one of the elite pitchers in baseball. I don't know, man. There's only a couple red flags. I kind of pick on him sometimes in the DFS community because the fly ball rate is there, the hard hit rate's there, the barrel rate's there. It's trending in the wrong direction, coming off career highs for him. What's your strategy when it comes to Cole? I have a prop here. MVP is too tough. Plus 350 to win the Cy Young, plus 500 to lead baseball in strikeouts. Would you take a flyer in either of those? Talk to me about your boy, Gerrit Cole.
Okay, so you really nailed it. Cole is a A1 type starter. You know, there's not much left to be desired. But when we are looking at things under the lens of fantasy baseball, you have to have that electron microscope out if we're trying to decide the difference between DeGrom and Cole or Bieber. These guys are all great. You're not going to come to a conclusion that any of them aren't. But again, if you only get one shot at these guys, right, Chris, you can't have them all. You really nailed the reason why I think I'm off of Cole, where he's going in fantasy. It's that elevation basket. You know, I often try and break players into compartmentalized baskets to create kind of a template so I don't let my biases get in the way. And one of those baskets, of course, in the age of the live ball, even with them supposedly deadening it, is elevation and quality of contact, things you already mentioned. But yeah, 43% fly balls is way too much for my ace. And to that point, to expand on that, the home runs were such an issue because his exit velocity on fly balls was over 95. That's one of the worst in the entire league for starters, just anywhere. And that's not going to play. It translated to a 1.7 home run per nine last year. It could have been worse. You know, anytime you have a Statcast hard hit rate, for those of you new, that's just a raw count of 95 mile per hour balls, which are correlated to a spike in slugging, you know, production. So when that percentage is over 44, where it was last year for Cole, you're going to be in trouble. I agree with you with the MVP. I don't want to compete with the bats. That's not where I want to be. I would be considering him for Cy Young, but with the surrounding teams in the division, you know, meaning the offenses being very strong and possibly the worst, you know, intra-divisional context as far as park factors go, I don't think I'm ready to go there either. Where you did pique my interest, Mr. Meany, is with strikeouts. So not only can Mr. Cole go out and give you 13 or 14 every game, the Yankees are heavily invested in him and let him throw as a horse. So where there are other guys with tremendous strikeout upside, most of those guys, when they give up a three-run homer, are coming out of the game. Mm. And Cole is not coming out of the game. He might give you seven, even with four or five earned. So that's where I'm looking, if I have to go with a prop, is the K prop, because I think the talent is there, but also the context is there. And if we can put a little cherry on it, the Orioles and Red Sox do quite a bit of K-ing. So that's going to help also, right? We have to look at all the context again, kind of turning over every stone. So if I have to put any of my money on Cole, I'm going to go for the K title. And especially, I like those odds.
Yeah, I like the odds too. So ADP, NFBC, I've been taking the drafts, the ADPs for the past 4 weeks, roughly 4 weeks, where drafts are really starting to heat up here. So ADP 7, SB 2 off the board on average. Yeah, 94 strikeouts for him was sixth in baseball. Bieber had the 122. He really did eat up just bad teams inside his division. He's going to face them again this season. There's some improved teams, some improved bats, but he's going to have to travel outside the division as well. Well, one last question about Cole. Just your strategy when it comes to first round. I know you do a lot of high stakes drafts. You're drafting with experts. You're doing a lot of it. You're all over it. You're also the face of our underdog as well. And some great strategy. You got the cheat sheet over at FTNFantasy.com. Check it out. We've been doing some videos of our FTN YouTube page. Promo code FTN. Going to get you some swag and Big John's cheat sheet there. You put a lot of work into it. It's great stuff. Even apart from underdog, if you don't want to try that out, it's a best ball format. But if you're just drafting in a standard 14 team league and you are, say, in the five spot and DeGrom has been gone, are you attacking a bat? Are you a guy that wants to get one of these aces early in the first or second round?
You know, it's these picks don't really happen in a vacuum, Chris, so it's hard to say outright, but I guess I can generalize. The answer is no. Roto has a disproportionate weight on steals, which I find I'd rather get mine when they're part of a more complete basket of tools, you know, a more complete skill set. So in the first round, if I could get, you know, Trey Turner steals with the average and the power that it comes with and all the ribbies and runs you could possibly handle, I'd prefer that. Ditto would go for Story. Ditto would go for J-Ram. Once you get into that second round, those elite steal producers, you know, 30 steals being very hard to achieve nowadays, those really fall off a cliff. And aside from Mondesi, that being another story for another day, I need the balance. I do see the value of the ace and what they can give you, but when you consider the volatility of the position and the high injury risk associated with it, I'd rather take the conservative route when there's a lot of money on the line, to be honest. That's me.
Yeah, I like that strategy. Okay, so Masahiro Tanaka is gone. He's not in the rotation. Corey Kluber is here. Struggled. I mean, what did he have? One outing last year. The year before that, he suffered some injuries. Jameson Taillon, Jordan Montgomery, Domingo Germán as well. Let's group all of these in together. And I guess I want to know what your expectations are for Corey Kluber. If you look at the back of his baseball card and you see the resume, you see this is a guy who has given teams, mostly Cleveland in his career, a lot of innings. You know, his last stint in Cleveland, only 35 innings, his real first injury. I mean, it would have been 235, 222, 215, 203, 215. You knew what you were going to get with him. He had decent command, sub-3 ERA seasons in there as well. Over the past couple of years, he's got 36.2 innings pitched. What are your expectations for him in the pinstripes this year?
All right. As far as Kluber goes, I have two critical numbers. So one of them is the number one. And one of them is the number 35. Number one is the amount of innings he pitched last year. And the number 35 is his age. Those are not a good combination when we're looking for upside projections. Now, do I know the future? No. Nor does anyone. However, applying like a pretty strict probabilistic method here, it's very hard to see any of these guys meeting topside projections. Now, we're just talking about Kluber. This is something I've spoke about kind of at length. The Yankees are my team. And of course I've been, you know, kind of a fount of fantasy content lately. I'm kind of burning the candle on both ends. So it's been quite a bit of focus on the Yankees. And I think it's fair, right? They're a contending team. They're very interesting and they brought in a lot of names, but that seems like what the shopping list was kind of based on. Cashman, if you're out there, I love you, man. My son's nursery is pinstriped. My blood is pinstriped. We love you. You're fam. You could come over any Sunday for pasta and gravy. Like the door's open. But this feels like name shopping to me, Chris. I'm sorry. It's the truth. You know, this feels like Corey Kluber. Oh, I know that name. Let's get him. You know, Jameson Taillon. I know that name. Kind of let's get him. Man, I don't know how the best way to put this. Maybe like a puzzle, right? Let's think of it as a puzzle. Now, listen, puzzle pieces need to fit together, and sometimes we have to massage that a little bit, right? You put a little extra pressure on the thumb. What we don't want to be doing is making an entire puzzle out of pieces we have to cut the ends off of and use the scissor. And that's what it feels like. Kluber, Tyon, Montgomery feel like a really good final piece. Maybe if it didn't fit, maybe a little bit of shaving could help. But you can't have an entire puzzle piece made of these. And that's what we have, you know, including Montgomery, who outside of Cole gave us the most amount of work. We're looking at a total of 45 innings from four different starters. Now, I don't have the information handy, but I can't remember any other team ever going into a season with that little, you want to call it experience from the year before, you know, physical innings thrown. So whatever I think of Kluber, Chris, not to take you on this long journey, but again, these things don't happen in a vacuum. How I feel about Kluber might not matter because his, like Frodo to the ring, right? His fate is tied to the others. They're all part of this story. And man, you're a better, right? We're both betters. What do they tell you about combining positive odds over and over again? That's normally not a winning strategy. And I think getting any of these players to 150 innings would be an underdog. Now, to expect one, sure, you could bet on an underdog, Chris. I followed your work. When you bet on underdogs, I tend to bet them with you. But no matter how smart either one of us are, it's not advisable to piggyback and parlay underdogs. The reason why the books pay out such crazy payouts is because they never happen. So this rotation isn't going to happen, regardless if it's Kluber being the wheel that falls off, or Tyon, or Montgomery, or heaven forbid for Yankee fans, Gerrit Cole.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry. I was just like the Grim Reaper there, but you know, fair analysis is what it is. I'm not a homer. We're going to say some good things about the offense, hopefully, but for the far as the starting pitching, I'm sorry. It's looking bleak for me.
Yeah. We started off weak, I guess. But no, I mean, this is the biggest question mark, right? We know that they can score runs, right? We know the lineup up and down. It's got a lot of potential in it, but Kluber ADP 176, Tyon 200, Montgomery 231. Do you want to touch on Montgomery a little bit more? He's an interesting sleeper, right? Obviously, he's going 50 picks after Kluber. Obviously, a little bit younger, 28. He showed signs as well. Just taking a look at the difference in FIP and ERA from this guy. I mean, a 5.11 ERA, 3.87 FIP, and the xFIP was 3.65. There's a 1.24 gap there. I was just like, again, you alluded to his innings. He didn't really do a whole lot there, but it was a weird season. Small samples across the board. We'll get into one particular on your team with a small sample that maybe people are looking into too much, but there's the 1.24 difference here is the fifth biggest difference from a high ERA and a low FIP. I mean, Porcello up at the top, Weaver, Kikuchi, Webb, Lindblom from the Brewers in there, and then Montgomery. So what did he show you? He showed you signs. He showed you flashes. Can he put that together is the big question, but would you take a shot on him? I mean, pick 231. It's not bad.
Well, yeah, I think the price is fair. And, you know, considering all the other circumstances we were talking about, kind of the surrounding context for him, he's going to get the ball and they're going to need him.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, you've circled, let's put it that way. You've circled why he's this kind of industry darling right now. And it's the way he outperformed the ERA indicators. Mm-hmm. And most of that is, I think, on the back of two numbers. So we had a 320 BABIP, which is pretty high. You know, I don't think you expect that to repeat. However, his line drive rate was kind of through the roof. So that's one of the first places I would look. The other would be his left on base percentage was down at 65. That I would go so far as to say is going to correct, even if it is an issue with his release point from the stretch. If you get into the expected stats, you know, that's probably where Montgomery again really kind of pops up as a guy that shows you, had those results been more in line with the expected stuff, I'll give you just a little bit. His 264 batting average is not great. The BA was, you know, 20 points lower, 40 points slug to X slug. WOBA at 321 is a little bit worse than average. His expected WOBA was 292, which is much better than average. And anything under 300 is getting into that elite territory. He's pairing that with a sub 5% walk rate. He's always been in the single digits and he's always induced so much chasing. It's consistently 5, 6, 7 points better than average. So there is a lot to like there. He's a quality of contact guy. That hard hit rate I mentioned with Cole, Montgomery's is almost half of that. You know, so there's something there. But again, my worry looking at these expected stats is that if it's a mechanical thing from the stretch, Chris, we can't just brush it off as, oh, that stat is going to revert.
Right.
Because if he's tipping from the stretch, then the guys getting on base are going to continue to score. So that's my red flag for the Montgomery drafters. But I think at the cost, you get the context, the ballparks are tough, but I definitely think Montgomery can return a profit at the price.
Is there a sleeper inside this rotation if we're only getting, I mean, projections here got Cole at 200. He's one of the few, right, that are going to get 200 innings if all goes well for him. You said it perfectly. If he gives up a three-run bomb in the fifth, whatever, he's going to stay in the game.
Yeah.
Kluber at roughly 155, Tyon 130-ish, Montgomery 117-ish, Sherman 79-ish. Like, who is the guy if this doesn't work out for Kluber and Tyon and these guys suffer injuries like we've seen in the past? Who's the guy that you're looking forward to seeing inside the rotation?
Easy. Domingo Germán. Absolutely Domingo Germán. Okay. And so, listen, I don't want to get off into the weeds about what goes on between players' heads and
sure.
how we should treat humanity. Chris, I'm not a perfect person. I try to do the best I can. I also try not to judge people for their mistakes. I leave that up to the law, the big guy upstairs, and the MLB commissioner's office when it comes to fantasy baseball. If a player gets the green light from those people, I am a go-ahead with him. I'm not saying I don't care, but I don't really care. If he's allowed to play, I put him in the draft pool. Domingo Germán has been lights out. Maybe the most effective pitcher anywhere in the major leagues right now through spring training. Check it out, people. Yeah. We've got 9 innings pitched. We have 5 hits, 1 walk. Last I checked, 6 runners through 9 innings. Pretty good. Yeah. No earned runs. Last time I checked, pretty good. 13 Ks for 9 innings in the spring. Uh-oh. Looks like Domingo Germán is going to be the Yankees' number 2 by the All-Star break. He is the man. He was so good. And he got himself into trouble, and he hopefully learned his lesson again. That's not my concern. If we're worrying about Yankee sleepers and we're incorporating price, to me, this is a slam dunk, like two-handed NBA Jam, you know, boom shakalaka slam for Domingo Germán. He's basically been forgotten. I couldn't even tell you where he's going. I just know it's probably 100 picks too late. And by the time I'm ready to get him, which is NFBC format, pitcher 9 or first off the bench. If I actually, Chris, I believe he's 12 team relevant. So I'm telling people to take him with your last pick, right? We don't absolutely shoot the moon because the chances are he might not even be drafted. But if he goes undrafted in your 12 team league, guess what? He's going to go out. He's going to throw 6 1/3. He's going to strike out 9 guys, maybe give up 1 or 2. And all of a sudden he's the big fab guy. He's the number 1 waiver priority. You got to beat those, right? You got to beat the market. So Domingo Germán, I have circled for a big time resurgence. He's been razor sharp, man. Yeah.
Yeah, 13.6 swinging strike percentage. He checks a lot of boxes for me, too. Doesn't give up a ton of contact. And we saw the 2018 season was 85 innings, but the double-digit K rate, the walks came down in 2019 as well. He's pick 317 on average NFBC. Wide range of outcomes there. You know, min pick of 192 and 474, the max. I like that sleeper call from you because you're right. Not a lot of people are going to take shots on him. They haven't been really taking shots on him in deeper formats like NFBC. So there is one more pitcher before we move over to the bats. I just want to get your take on Chapman. We know he's a stud. I think you think he's a stud. I mean, he's going to flirt with 100 Ks. He's going to flirt with the most saves. He is relief pitcher number 3 on average off the board, Hendricks and Hader. And his ADP is 72. Are you a guy that likes to lock down a top 5 closer? Are you willing to spend a top, say, 50 pick, maybe 70 on average for Chapman?
That's tough. And that's probably more about the individual player than about, you know, the fantasy player. I mean, what I feel about the pitcher, because I think you have to separate those things. Chapman is an elite closer. He's one of the few guys you could probably pencil in for 35 or more saves. Also the Yankees, along with the Astros, one of the very few teams who are still using a single man in the role. So he checks every box for fantasy and real life. My beef has always been the volatility at the position and just the way it shakes out, like, he just may not get opportunities. It just could happen. You know, he could not pitch for a couple days, then get a work day, and then they need him the next day, he's not available. Or the Yankees with that offense start rattling off 4, 5, 6 run wins, which could happen. I mean, it's in the cards. We've seen it. And they don't really need him. Now, I think, don't get me wrong, I really do think his saves are safe. But when we're talking about that electron microscope at the very top, I have a hard time discerning between elite closers, let's say. So I would always rather just take the last one. For me, you can't really sell me on why Raisel Iglesias is going 2 rounds later than Chapman, let's say. So when I get to those point in a comparative argument, Chris, I'd rather just take the cheaper one. And I'd rather put that draft capital towards what I see as still elite players that are very impactful before I'm ready to go for specialty things like saves. You know, we're into spring training now where the closure landscape is becoming a bit more clear. Yeah. And I think if you're sharp, you could kind of, I hate throwing darts because throwing darts kind of implies like you don't know where it's going to land. These are targeted inferences that we're looking for. And I think you could do some damage with your bullpen that way. So in general, I'm off the big relievers generally.
Well, that makes me feel better because you're a smart guy and it's kind of my strategy too. You definitely can't ignore them, especially in a roto league.
Right.
You need to have them, of course, but there are some late flyers and that's why you check out the FTN Fantasy Draft Guide. Okay, so over to the bats. You got DJ LeMahieu, ADP 27, Judge 53, Voit 60, Torres 66, Stanton 119. Let's just talk about LeMahieu. 336 average since the start of 2019, leads everybody in baseball. He's got a 386 base percentage over that span, 536 slugging. He has 36 bombs and 150 runs, a 146 WRC plus. This is just good stuff. Any red flags you see from LeMahieu, though, he is the first second baseman off the board, depending on what site you play. You got first, second, and third eligibility. Min pick for this guy, 9.
Wow.
9.
I'm sorry. That's
first round pick.
No. Listen, real life baseball player, DJ LeMahieu is fantastic. Even as a fantasy player, he's fantastic. I think that price is justified more in point leagues,
yes,
Chris, than it is in roto. And I'm going to tell you why just briefly. We can have a little bit of fun. Let's have a little bit of fun with projections. Now, anyone that follows my work knows I use them. I don't overuse them. And if anything, I probably use them against people. I usually refer to it as where I pivot for a counterpunch rather than where I plant my front foot to attack. For some people, the projections are a point of attack. And for me, they're a counter point because I know that a certain percentage of people think that's what's going to happen. So I put that in my calculus to predict how the market will react. Okay. That all being said, LeMahieu is going too early. I'm going to tell you why fun with projections. He has a pretty wide spread if you look at the different providers. Granted, all of the batting averages are very high and none of them are below 295. And I think that says a lot to the person having a 295 floor. Not many people can say that. Where LeMahieu's value gets into the sticky wickets, if you will, is in these counting stats, Chris. So he's going to need every bit of the speed expectations and of the power expectations in order to pay off his roto price. The issue for me is he's not a slugger nor a speedster. So if he falls into the lower ranges, again, I'm a big Yankee fan. I love LeMahieu. You know, he's great. I mean, he's got fantastic hair. Like, he's great. But we're talking money. We're talking stats. We're talking black and white kind of objective analytics here, comparative analysis. And the problem is if he doesn't meet those are what pays the bills when we're talking about translation through the auction calculator. So, for example, if you put him through the lower projections, which is the Bat X, which is where I have been subscribing, not only do I consider Derek a friend and an objective genius and a friend of my podcast, Cork Stats, but he's tested it out and said, it's working better than the Bat. I find it's aligned with my own work. So confirmation bias aside, I've been using the Bat X. That projection system lands LeMahieu 295, 17-5, 86-73. Hard to complain about that from a second baseman.
Really?
The problem with this, Chris, is that leaves about you're probably about a $15 to $16 player. Now, that's not bad. However, if you run through the other players to the auction calculator, Ozzie Albies, Jose Altuve, and Ketel Marte all score considerably higher, 25% higher by money value, and as does Keston Hiura, is a buck higher. So there's some fun with projections where guys going, Jose Altuve is going much later than DJ LeMahieu, okay, people? So there's a little fun of projections. If you put him through the highest end projections, okay, and this is an exercise I advise people do. Don't just find the one you like. Look at the difference at what it means. So if you now you put him through the highest end, that's Fangraph's depth charts, which absolutely loves him. He's at 300, 20 and 7, 96 and 76. And he's like a $19.5 player, which still only puts him behind like three people. So I hope I give people a little bit of perspective with these counting stats and how much it matters, right? So just a couple of homers and a couple of steals knocked like 20% of his auction value off his, you know, his finish results. So when you compare him up to other guys that might do the very same thing, Ketel Marte, Jose Altuve, very hard to justify that price, Chris. Very hard for me.
Yeah, it is tough. And I know the second base position is weak, but there is certainly value when it comes to Jose Altuve. And I don't know if that has... I mean, sure, I'd imagine it has something to do with people hating on the Astros and wanting no piece of them. We had Jen Piacenti on here to talk about the Astros, but he carried it over in the postseason, and you could take postseason with a grain of salt, yada, yada, but it still happened. It was a very small sample size last year. I believe Altuve had five homers, and I think he had five homers in the postseason and flirted with a 400 average. Like, he showed that he could still do it. But yeah, he's the difference in the two for in terms of picks. It's huge. I mean, I was shocked when I saw Min pick 9. I get it. You said points league, but I was pretty taken back by that. Let's go.
Yeah, as well, you should be. What could that person realistically be expecting? Chris, pick 9 is Jose Ramirez. I'm going to get 290. I'm going to get 35 and 35.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Maybe the runs are not the Yankee runs.
Sure.
Oh, he's going to get let's put it this way. Ribbies and runs for Jose Ramirez should be $190 or $195. So I'm sorry. You're shooting the moon with pick 9 at LeMahieu. I even think you're shooting the moon with him as 2B1. And I love him, but yeah. I don't think the fantasy numbers mash out for this year.
Okay. Let's group these big sluggers together. We got Judge ADP 53, outfielder 15, Luke Voit ADP 60. He had the most home runs last season. And then Stanton ADP 119. Like, this is crazy. Another wide range. You either love Stanton, you're in on the upside, which, you know, I get on board with that. Pick 58, man, pick 177 max. So Stanton is a guy that I think could definitely win you your league. Like, if he's fallen to the 8th and 9th round, the great baseball invitational, I got him in the 9th round, utility over there. He's outfielder if you're playing on Yahoo or other sites like that. Yeah. Judge is outfielder, and obviously Voit is first. So, you know, different positions, but grouping them in together because they are a big part of this offense. If you were to take, without even giving you odds, if you were to take, I think I already know the answer, but if you were to take one of these guys to lead the league in home runs, Stanton, right? Like, who are you?
Yeah.
Who's the one that you're maybe out on? And then the one that you're like, that's it, man, I'm doing it.
Judge is funny because only on the Yankees could somebody with Judge's kind of skill set be, I don't want to say forgotten, but kind of forgotten.
Yes.
He almost, I mean, it feels like a second rounder to me, you know, just doing the calculus that we always do. The age and the context and the team with the potential and the underlying peripherals. There's really not much of a hiccup in Aaron Judge's game. You know, even for a guy of his size, if you're going to have in zone contact in the mid 80s, like, we're going to take that. We're going to take that all day. All the power metrics are off the charts. So Judge is phenomenal. And if anybody's kind of interested in seeing him and maybe a little closer, Chris, I did some outfield deep statistical debates where I broke out that template I was talking about. Judge is one of those guys because I personally had a hard time getting through. I did them at 4 at a time. So like the first 4, I did the first 16 outfielders 4 at a time. And to see them under this kind of very, you know, this thick lens, right, with a lot of scrutiny, Judge holds up to scrutiny. Aaron Judge's profile holds up to scrutiny. If you're worried about the health, then you're worried about the health. And I think that's kind of the big thing with these three guys. Mm-hmm. If I got to take one horse right now, man, it is Stanton. Gosh, that hit tool is absurd in a way. I don't remember ever seeing anything like it. It almost looks effortless, and he seems to hit these home runs that barely get, 20 feet off the ground and are out of the ballpark in a flash.
The one he hit the other day in spring? Where'd that go?
Oh, my goodness. People are dinging him for being injury prone. I'm kind of seeing some flukiness here.
100%.
I do understand that. I mean, a lot of them are not like big structural injuries, which I would be worrying a lot more about. If I got to take one, considering the price, it's got to be Stanton. My beef with Voit, before we just move on to him, because I was a big Luke Voit guy, Chris. In fact, I was so big on Voit. Something I did was I just broke his season into pre and post injury. He was great before the injury. He's a very tough guy. He's one of those tough as nails, bourbon and rusty nails for breakfast guys. So he toughed it out. He stayed on the field, and it kind of hurt him because he wasn't very good at all. He was a totally different hitter. So I thought healthy, he'd be great. He was going as late as 225. I made him part of my definitive draft plan to take him at 185, let's say, knowing I was so far reaching the market, I was going to get him. And he was great. Fast forward to this year, I think he's still very good. I'm really worried about the foot. He's been talking about it already. And Stanton is going to be the priority for those DH at-bats. So there's a chance we see a bit less Voit. And I'm kind of worried about those tough character traits, something we love for ball players, but that foot, think back to Albert Pujols, plantar fasciitis derailed him and for long periods of time. So Voit, it can happen circling the bases. It could just happen standing up off the bench. So I've kind of faded Voit. I'm a little worried about the foot. So I don't really have much of him, but if you do have him, I think the production while he's on the field will be there.
Yeah, I mean, I got a couple shares. I don't like hearing about the foot. And as an Angels guy, I mean, my goodness, Albert Pujols talked about the foot. And he didn't try to make it as an excuse, but it was evident. It was very clear that it bothered him. You could take his swing from the year before and the current swing and see the difference and how, it was just very gingerly, how he – You could tell it bothered him, and it took something away from the power. There's no question.
Right. You're planting. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's tough for a power hitter like that. So, I mean, looking at all the projections, most projections have all of these guys, at least at 30. I saw ATC a little hesitant with the Stanton, 31 homers, only has him for 520 plate appearances under 22 games. So of course it is the injuries. It's a lot of people. I know there's people in my home league that every time somebody drafts Stanton, it's like, oh, it's like he could win the league or you're going to be ticked off and you're going to drop him on the waiver wire. And then you hear people like, I'm not taking him anymore. I'm like, I swear I'm not taking him anymore. And it's like me who's like, I'll take him. I'm going to take the guy that's going in the eighth or the ninth round. So the odds, it's 31 for Voit to lead the league in homers, and it's 21 for Stanton and for Judge as well. I think I know your answer, but Stanton, that's solid, man. 20-1 for a guy a couple years removed, 38 and 59 as a member of Miami that season. So even if he just gives us 550, right?
I think he's being punished for the expectation of health.
Right.
Because almost.
Which creates value.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
particularly with these future bets, which kind of provide longish odds. You shouldn't have to feel like all my chips have to go on one spot if he's paying 20-1. It sounds kind of intuitive, but that's clearly a value for me. I can't name 19 other guys that he shares a chance to do this with. He's on a very short list. He's on an extremely short list of guys that I would put money on down to get this. I could also see maybe splitting it with Judge because, I'm a conservative better, Chris, and I like the idea of taking X and splitting it in two and letting both those horses run because I feel like one of them is going to give us a full season. I just don't know who it is. And whichever one it is has a damn good chance of being the home run king.
Yeah. I mean, if they were all the same price, I think, as much as we're talking about Stanton here, I do like Judge just a little bit more. I think there's just slightly, slightly some ups. I'm a sucker for him, man. I think he's just, I took him a couple years ago, late round, and he blew
up. Well, I think
up,
the elevation basket is a little better for Judge. Judge is a little better with the lift. But again, you know, I mentioned EV, exit velocity on fly balls, right? So Giancarlo Stanton's is over 97. His expected wOBA contact, so it's his expected wOBA on contact, balls of contact, is 517, like 40 points higher than Judge and Voit. I mean, this, it's just absurd. You know, his barrels for BBE, 18.4%, Judge at 11, Voit at 13. I know it only sounds like a couple ticks, but when we're talking about percentages, it's a 75% higher than other elite players. So those are the things that I look for. If we're talking about the best, you know, give me the best. He might actually make a good hedge with Mike Trout. You know, maybe you take a certain amount of money and figure out a way that you get paid either one of those two, because it feels like you get a full season from either one of them. I don't know who can beat them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, so Gleyber Torres, 2020, we talked about it. Weird year, small sample, three homers last year, hit 243. Strikeout rate came down, the walk rate went up. Are we looking into, like, how do you treat 2020 from him? That was just whatever. Like, because the season before, man, 38 bombs and 24 as a rookie. Like, I think that this kid, and I call him a kid, but he's still, what, 24 years old. He's still a kid, man. He's the youngest guy in your lineup.
Yeah.
This guy, I think, is a stud. And
he is.
Yeah. What? So what? We're just you take the good, mix in a little bit of the bad, but whatever. Like, what's your expectations? Like, right back to, maybe not back to flirting with 40 home runs, but I think 30's a lock. I think he's a 270 plus hitter, is he not?
Yeah, listen, let's be fair, right? So I think the biggest problem coming off of 2020 from any analyst is, and it's human nature to kind of be self-serving. And I don't mean this in a malicious way, but just in a, it becomes instinctive for us. So if a guy that you like did well in 2020, your bias tells you to use that and build off it. There's evidence of continuation. And if a guy that you like wasn't good, then we throw that away. So we want to be careful to have these reactive responses. Okay, let's try and be proactive. One of the things, Chris, that I am applying for the short season is discipline. Okay, I'm the type to stay away from results which are highly variant and try and stay with the disciplinary things or the things in the hitter's control. So you mentioned the K rate. We saw the best K rate of his career by quite a bit. And to build off that even more so, it was replaced almost tick for tick with walks. So if we think about discipline on this balance beam, right, you could drop your Ks, but if you're replacing that with weak contact and outs, that's not great. So just dropping K rate in a vacuum, people, is not necessarily beneficial, right, Chris? With two strikes, rather than take that third strike and be crying on the way back to the dugout, you could kind of lunge at it and soft pop it to the second baseman. You didn't strike out, you didn't get the K, but you didn't do anything good. So what is important is that balance beam. When the Ks drop, but the walks raise. I mean, and people, not a tick, which we always want to be careful to separate the signal from the noise. 4 to 5 ticks of disciplinary shift, you know, a shift of equilibrium, that is signal. That's not noise. Gleyber Torres showed us measured moves that we want to build off of. Okay, the rest of the stuff, the result stuff, don't really care. You know, the swinging strike rate even dropped a little bit. I like that. In zone contact, kind of in line. Chase rate. His chase rate dropped like 20%. Those are the things that I want to see. You mentioned batting average. He had a 286 BABIP. That's not him. He's generally a bit higher, even if it's 10 or 15 points, which should put him in that like 265 to 270 range, like you mentioned. The power is certainly there to get topped out in the 30s. I'm higher than the projections. I might even be higher than the projections on steals. I think they're punishing him for 2020. He had a couple issues. I believe he showed up out of shape and he really never got into his groove. Now, I'm not going to make that as an excuse. That's not what we want to see. However, come playoff time, he sharpened up and he went bananas. 425 batting average. Two homers in the 7 games. They also had 2 steals. I was loving what I saw from Torres. He was aggressive. Man, this kind of – I hate being too subjective, but I also like to build, you know, weave my tapestry, Chris. He looked motivated, and he looked like a player that said, this is my team. When I start seeing that guy stealing bases, he was in it. And like I'm saying, you're losing a strikeout. You're picking up the walks. I don't know. I think Torres is a full go for me. Absolutely full go. I couldn't be any more on this guy than I am. He's really the short side. He's probably my highest own shortstop, to be honest, Chris.
Yeah, I love where he's going. I mean, it's such a deep position, and there is some speed to be had at this position, but I don't think it's a stretch to say, like, maybe best case scenario is 10 stolen bases, but I don't think it's a stretch to maybe, you know, project that for him.
I think that's fine.
Most projections like 6-7 here and there, but to your point, the two into the postseason, yeah, it's shortstop number 10 on average, NFBC pick 67, 31 the min, and then 105 the max. Crazy stuff there. So two more guys. We don't have to spend too much time on Sanchez, the catcher position, but I do want to get your thoughts on him and maybe how you approach the position for our viewers, because it is weird. A lot of people get involved with high stakes. You got to draft two of these guys. And then I want to get your thoughts on Clint Frazier. He's starting to get a little bit of buzz as a sleeper type guy. He is now 26 years old. The plate appearances haven't been there for him. 500 plus most projections besides Zips at 474. But even 474, they got him for 21 bombs and 6 stolen bases. What does he need to do to get more playing time? And do you think it's in his future? I would assume it has, it could open up a path if we talk, you know, when we're talking about some of those other big guys suffering injuries. But let's just assume that everything goes right for those guys. Where does Frazier fit in?
Well, I think we could do Sanchez just really quick, avoid it. I don't want any players that have a batting average floor that starts with a one. We've seen it twice already, short set or not. He's not a batting average guy. The contact quality is fantastic. Empty power, to me, is the easiest thing to find. Batting average is not. I'd rather take a catcher with a better contact profile. You know, I'm going to take like Buster Posey later on there's just guys I'd rather have later.
Remember when he was catcher three or four, though? Remember just a couple of years ago, like we're 2 or 3 years removed from him being a top three catcher in rankings heading.
Well, the home runs are there. And again, 40 home runs are in the range of outcomes. So is 250 strikeouts. So is 190 batting average. And guess what? They all might happen in the same season. So just when you're like, well, the 40 home runs is the best case outcome. No, it might bring its ugly friends with it. You know, and you have to spend the night talking to them as well. I can't go down that road as I get older, Chris. I'm getting a 39, almost 40. That's when you hit curmudgeon level. And as I progress as a fantasy baseball player, no, really, all kidding aside, I wear my mistakes on my sleeve, and I like to bring my followers with me. You know, batting average is a real thing, and it's very hard to make up. It's very hard to find late, and then it's very hard to make up late in the season.
Yes.
So you got to find guys. Even it's very hard to predict batting average. The best ways to find it for me is hit tool. You know, guys that don't chase, guys with high in-zone contact rates, give me line drive rates, and I'll kind of take it from there. I love Sanchez, man, but I didn't even mention the fact he has a pass ball problem. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not the catcher come the All-Star break, the starting catcher, I mean. Okay. You know, I like Hijikawa even better because I want my catcher to play defense. I'd much rather him stop a ball because I don't even know if you could equate this. We might have to get like a Rudy Gamble, like a quant guy on this, but you know, for what is the runner that scores from third on a pass ball is worse than an RBI for you because it seems like they only happen seemingly in the most critical spot.
always.
Whatever. Sanchez, which was just supposed to be a cold fade, forget him.
Okay.
Man, Clint Frazier, he's been an enigma for me, Chris. And throughout my extensive kind of draft experience this year already, or every year, my out for Clint Frazier has actually been to pair him with Stanton. Thinking to myself, the top side is two starting Yankees in the center of the lineup every day that both hit 40 home runs, that both have, you know, 200 RBIs plus runs or whatever, just all the goodness. And maybe the downside is losing Stanton, hopefully he produces for us first, gets you Frazier, which that Clint Frazier, meaning a post, you know, a sans Stanton Frazier, would be going 100 picks higher. So I'm kind of hoping maybe to build this Franken Yankee, Frankie. I'll call him Frankie. Yeah, so my Frankenstein Yankee, they kind of fit together. If you think that's a little crazy, which I also understand, then I think you have to fade him. Just when we thought Frazier was going to get the playing time, and he's very productive when he does, it's power plus patience, something I love. Talkman is still there. He's very good defensively, so that's always a threat for PT. Then they went and brought back Brett Gardner, and now I'm just like, well.
You know he's going to get quite a Frazier.
Yeah, for me, Frazier in a vacuum could be a wasted pick, and I don't mean zero. I don't mean he's going to get sent to the minors. I just mean – he could be a fair share outfielder, and you can't pay for that.
No. Dude, you're fantastic, man. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a busy guy, and you're deep diving into a lot over at FTNFantasy.com. Guys, check out Cork Stats. It is phenomenal. And it's not just all Yankees, right? So
that's right. Right, it's not all doom and gloom, Chris.
No, but you're fair with your team, right? And that's why I'm kind of getting people to do, you know, their teams. Yeah. And you're not coming across as a homer. It's a free podcast. Check it out. Check out the stuff over at our FTN YouTube page, the Underdog Fantasy stuff, and the MLB Draft Kit is just $19.99. Over under 95.5 wins. For the Yankees.
Wow, that's such a good line. Yeah. Wow, is that what the line is? Man, the market's a little bit lower on the Yankees than I am. When you led off today with a minus 189, I think you said,
yeah.
Yankee division, I was kind of laughing at that. The Yankees are not the favorite to win the division. You want to know the odds? I like to ask myself and not the market, the average person not being as bright as I am. Sorry, average person, but George Collins.
You were on the Rays last year. You're on the Rays again.
I'm a Rays. It's Rays all days over here, baby. Okay. And I'll tell you what, just really quick, they have the power pitching. Also, expanded playoffs lend itself to high impact pitching, high impact bullpens, and more like scrappy offenses than big power offenses. To me, the Rays are more built for World Series success. And again, where you have to mention price. So they're coming in at a better price.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's where my money is. As far as the Yankees 95, I really thought it was going to be 98, so I could give you an easy under to 95. That's where I am. I'm at 95. I think there's going to be quite a bit of self-immolation in the division, let's say, right? There's going to be some cannibalization going on. It's going to be very difficult. Like, you know, where the Yankees used to project 14 of 19 wins against the Rays, now it's more like, I don't know, between 8 and 10.
Yeah, it's like split, right?
Three or four of those, Chris, are probably going to go into extra innings, and that's why we have such a hard time figuring it out.
Yeah.
It's tough. The Yankees are going to have their hands full, especially in the division with those Rays. If I really had to, I think I'd go under by a nose.
Seem like maybe it's a stay away, right? It seems like
one of my claim to fame is always telling people, listen, no bet is better than a bad bet. Yeah. I don't know if you want to leave people out on a piece of good betting advice. It's just that. Losing is bad, obviously, people. But we can quantify this. Losing is worse than not losing. And I know that sounds kind of funny, right? It sounds intuitive. But here, I'm going to put some math to it just real quick. You have $100. You lose 10%. You're down to 90. You make back 10%. You're only at 99. You still have a net loss of 1%. You continue to repeat that process, you'll end up at zero, okay? So no bet is better than a bad bet, because if you lose 10%, you need to make 11 to get it back. So that's that good stuff.
That is that good stuff. FTNbets.com. John will have all kinds of bets leading up, some futures, and throughout the season as well. Just a great asset to us over at FTN. So thank you so much for the time, man. At MLB Moving Average AVG. Again, check out Cork Stats. It's free. Lots of content over at FTNFantasy.com. Cheers, Big John. And for you guys watching and listening, we will be back with another team tomorrow.
All right. Care.